This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it's Friday, August 9th, 2019, and we are live. And I've got a real live sex positive therapist on the line. And I know you love it when I have therapists on the line because essentially you get free therapy. And I'm not judging you for that. So if you want to call and talk to us live, you can call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. He's been on the show before, but I'm going to remind you who he is and what he does. He is Dr. Chris Donahue. He practices general psychology and specializes in individual and couples sex, relational, and marital therapy. His areas of focus include sexual and relational trauma work, sexual compulsivity, dysfunction, body image issues, body dysmorphia, body positivity, gender, and non-traditional sexuality, identities, and relationships. His work is also with diverse individuals, including all gender expressions, sexual orientations, and kink, BDSM, poly issues. He practices in Los Angeles. He's the author of two books, Rebel Love, Break the Rules, Destroy Toxic Habits, and Have the Best Sex of Your Life, and Sex Outside the Lines, Authentic Sexuality in a Sexually Dysfunctional Culture. He's the director of clinical education for the Sexual Health Alliance and host of the relaunched Loveline nightly radio show. He's co-host of the Amber Rose Show with Dr. Chris podcast. And he has his doctorate in human sexuality and has been trained in psychology. He's a licensed clinical therapist. He's a certified sexologist. He's a rock star. He's Dr. Chris. Hi, Dr. Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I never called you Dr. Chris, not once in my life, but now I've decided that I'm going to.
Okay. Please never again, unless it's in this context.
Okay. So I've been reading your book. Your newest book is Rebel Love, Break the Rules, Destroy Toxic Habits, Have the Best Sex of Your Life. Those all sound like things we all want to do. You know, another sort of subtitle for this book could be, everything you've learned about sex and relationships is wrong.
I love that, because you know what you said about my first book? You said something about it should be called No Fucks Given.
Okay. So I like to come up with catchy alternate subtitles. So one thing you do in this book is you get right to the point. You do not mince words. In most cases, you are not vague. And you are very opinionated. So keeping all this in mind, I would like to try a new interview format that I've never done with anyone before. Because this is like fun. I've pulled out some ideas, some statements, and some frameworks from the book. I'm going to say them, and then I'm just going to let you have at it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, number one, you have to ask for what you want. Most other dating books offer tools and strategies that are just plain wrong.
I have to laugh when I hear myself back sometimes, every now and then.
It wasn't a direct quote. I mean, I was summarizing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, it's one of those things where I, day to day, whether it's me traveling to lecture in my clinical practice or on the radio, I'm hearing people quote back the same problematic norms, standards, and expectations with dating. And, you know, I've gone through a lot of the dating manuals and, you know, they're problematic in that they're either outdated or they're assuming everyone's heterosexual. You know, I was just looking through some attachment theory interpersonal neurobio stuff, and it's just so rooted in toxic monogamy. And it's bullshit. And I wanted to present an alternative model, which is kind of like what I think all my work is rooted in. I'm a big fan of keeping myself curious and interested. I want to say things that haven't been heard before. And so it really lands me often in just kind of critiquing and dismantling other people's work. And so, I'm just lovingly trying to move people towards authenticity. But again, trying to provide alternative models of living and dating and having sex that might be more sustainable and also just less oppressive.
And you do expose how a lot of the things we hear about when we get dating advice is about, you know, don't text them right after you leave the first date. Right. Don't act too eager or interested. This sort of all these different weird games. And you're just like, fuck all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Be direct.
Because it reinforces and creates even more anxiety than people already might have. And it moves us away from the idea of just authentic exploration of chemistry and compatibility. And, you know, I talk about myself in that I'm quite anxious in my dating style, and I like a lot of closeness and intimacy. And I've been shamed just socially for the fact that I like to keep a lot of connection and don't allow a lot of space between dates and whatnot. And I jokingly say that I date backpack style, where I just want to put you in my backpack, kind of like you are with your dog, like Bodhi. I date like you. Relationship where wherever Tristan is, Bodhi is not far from. Mm-hmm. You know? And I date that way, and it works for me. But people try to counsel me, friends in different styles that try to move me away from that. And it always comes back to this idea that I shouldn't be who I am, and that I should always be trying to manipulate the situation. Now, the problem with that is, again, it keeps us anxious. It inherently covertly shames who we are, and it doesn't allow us to really explore the compatibility of our relationship, which then creates problems down the road. And then they end up in my office doing couples work because they were misrepresenting themselves and they were building a relationship based on a false chemistry, and they weren't able to do any reality testing. And so I'm a big fan of, like, really show up as yourself from the door and really present yourself based on what you're looking for relationally, whatever that might be, so that you give the other person essentially informed consent, right? Like, mm-hmm. They can't really assess how much they like you if you're not really showing up as yourself. So yeah, I'm just a big fan of authenticity.
But this makes a lot of sense, because I can remember when one of my very close friends started dating again, and she was online dating. And one of the dates she went on, someone said to her, you're really intense. Now, I will give it to you. She is really intense. It's one of the things I love about her. But I said to her, really frankly, that's not your person. Yeah. Like, you want a person who's like, this is amazing. You're amazing. Not like, you're too intense for me. Right. If you're too intense for them, then you're not a good match, because someone else is going to think you're just intense enough.
And I've heard that as well. That's funny, because that is literally one of the top three critiques I'll get from people is, wow, you're a lot or you're intense. Mm-hmm. So I've had to do the work your friend probably had to do, which is, on one hand, really try to ground ourselves in the value of who we are, because it can be really hard to hear that and not feel like we're not okay. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. The right person is going to find you to be phenomenal and dynamic. And they're going to use words like, you're quite passionate and you light up and you energize me. And they're not going to be too small, because that's really what it is. The people are too small if they think your friend is too much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Point number two in the book that I want to go over, and I highly and totally agree with, so I'm just going to put it out there what my bias is. Sex on the first date is a great way to get to know someone.
You agree?
Of course. All of my long-term relationships have started this way, and my best relationships have started this way.
Agreed. Same with me. And to piggyback on that, the caveat's also that not even knowing what you're looking for, hooking up, having sex, all that can sometimes lead to something more long-term without even necessarily knowing that. What I mean is, a lot of people that are looking for partnership somehow pathologize or shame hookup culture as though it promises and leads to nothing more. And that's not true, because not only did my best, most sustainable, loving, long-term relationships start out with sex on the first date, two of them were supposed to have only been sex, but through the chemistry and the compatibility that was so able to be assessed, we were able to move forward. I mean, that's the thing, like over a coffee date, you can learn about their favorite movie. You can learn about, you know, their job. But sex is where we really get to figure out body esteem, self-esteem, intimacy, tolerance, how much closeness we can manage, sexual compatibility. You know, they're just different entry points and different ways of exploring all the different levels of connection and intimacy. We have to explore all of them. And kind of like I think yourself, I'm one of those people where sex is really important. Sex is also my work. Sex is also a site where I work on myself. And so it's important for me to be with someone who also honors and values that. And they would be open to sex sooner than later, for sure.
One of the things that I've learned from one of my current lovers is that for me, sex is a language. And not like these are your love languages bullshit, because that stuff is super heteronormative. But like when we are together, it is like speaking another language, but we are both, it's like I can't explain it in words.
You did. I love what you just said. It's a language. It's a language.
Yeah.
I love that. It's a form of communication, and it has its own nuances, and we can't put words to them. But again, that links back to, we live in a sex-phobic culture, so we don't have legitimizing terms for a lot of the experiences and nuances that one can have within sexuality, right? Or relationality. We're so limited at the words we can use that we've been given. But I agree with that. And that's an important language to, you know, me, you, and a lot of your listeners. And so I want someone that speaks that language as well.
Okay. Another thing you write about in your book, which I think is incredibly provocative, incredibly controversial, and I'll be honest with you, I have never heard anyone say this before you.
Okay.
Codependency isn't real. It's not bad.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'll tell you, that is one of the zingers that gets a lot of hands thrown up in the air when I travel to lecture. I can see the face you're making, even though
I've been accused of codependency. I've been told by therapists that one of my relationships is codependent. So this is like a whole reframe for me.
Yeah, you bring that book and highlight it and throw it on your lap. You know what? Well, it's like this. So a few things. One, someone once said, aren't you talking about interdependence? And I said, well, yes and no. And one of the reasons why I say it the way I say it is because I want it to be really profound and hit people so that they really just sit with it and process it and it doesn't get skimmed by. Two, I'm definitely rooted in, because of the way I was socially and academically raised, I'm rooted in a lot of queer and feminist values. And so it's about trying to move towards more relationality, more cooperative ways of being. And also, just if we're going to borrow some of the terminology of like colonization and decolonization, it's about just changing the standard script. And again, thinking in more relational terms. And I think that there's something stunning in that. Like, we live in a culture that is so obsessed with individualism. And I think it's really created a lot of problems. And in my office with the couples, I hear, you know, me, and there's a place for that. There's definitely a healthy place for that. But it also gets in the way of a lot of their attempt to build intimacy and connection. And I'm working a lot all the time with the couples in my practice and individuals. I'm trying to think more in terms of us and we, and not being so American in this idea of needing so much separation and individualism, and that, you know, connection and fusion can be healthy things. Our nervous systems, when we enter relationship, wire. We literally neuro and biologically wire when we attach to someone. And that's a real thing. And so just trying to honor that. And yeah, just pushes to a different cultural way of being. And so I think it's about sometimes going really to the other polar side in order to land somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. You have to chew on that, people. Yeah. We're going to take a commercial break and you're going to chew on that piece of knowledge. Because let me tell you, it was a light bulb moment for me. And there were many in this book. So stay with us. Listen to the commercials. Come back more with Dr. Chris Donahue. It's Anal August.
That's right. It's that time of year when it's all about the rear. And yes, the pleasure chest has got all the gear. But there's so much more to anal sex than just plugs, beads, and prostate massagers. Whether you are embarking on your very first anal odyssey or you're a certified ass master, the pleasure chest has tips and tricks to help you make the most of your anal adventures. First, there are 12 different sex ed classes all about the ass at stores this month. Can't make it to one? No worries. They'll be covering all things anal via their blog and social media. Everything from booty basics, advanced anal, to anal safety. Plus, there will be B-Vibe pop-ups in LA and New York throughout the month. You can get 20% off all B-Vibe products, online only, or get a free beginner anal toy with every purchase of $50 and up in stores. Go to pleasurechest.com and celebrate Anal August. Hey everyone, you know that Sex Out Loud is part of Pleasure Podcasts, right? Well, we are, and I want you to know about the other great shows in this collective. Sluts and Scholars takes a smart look at sex with a really wide range of guests. Here's more.
I'm Nicoletta.
And I'm Simone.
And together, we're Sluts and Scholars.
Every Thursday, we drop a new episode and probably your pants.
Our guests range from Nina Hartley to exes and Dita Von Teese to sexual trauma therapists.
So join us weekly to talk smart and fuck smarter.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Have we sort of wet your whistle? Have we gotten you a little stimulated? Do you want to talk to us about this stuff? Do you want to yell at Chris, for example? I'm sure there's some people out there who do. I'm not encouraging abusive behavior. I'm just saying, if you want to talk, you can call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. We're talking to Dr. Chris Donahue about his new book, Rebel Love: Break the Rules, Destroy Toxic Habits, and Have the Best Sex of Your Life. And basically, I've taken out little nuggets of wisdom from this book, and I'm going to fire them off and then let Dr. Chris have it. I called you Dr. Chris again just to piss you off. Sure. Okay, here's one. After a breakup, you don't have to wallow. You can get into another relationship, even right away. The idea of the rebound is a myth.
Yeah, we are obsessed with this idea of, oh, you know, don't move too quickly into something else. You know, it'll have an inherent fragility to it or whatever. And, you know, the studies show that the length of time between relationships don't speak to their health or sustainability. That's not what we need to look to. And so, you know, for a lot of people, they're very relational or, you know, here's really what it is. You want to feel desirable. You want to feel dateable. So getting back into the dating world can be a really good way to have that reflected back where your self-esteem might have been injured. And I work with a lot of people in doing that, you know, just kind of moving forward. But I'm also all about people maybe needing some time and space as well away from relationality. Because again, you know, the dating apps have been really positive and also really negative in some ways. And there's a lot of people that are burnout, overwhelmed, having repeated negative experiences. And it's really eroding at their self-esteem. And so it's kind of a case-by-case thing. But, you know, again, just trying to dispel the myth that if you move into something right away, that it inherently is unhealthy or problematic.
Next up, even a one-night stand is a relationship and a valid one.
Yeah. You know, people really don't humanize some of these sexual experiences, and they'll say things like, you know, it's a trick, it's a hookup. And in doing so, they try to deny any social or personal responsibility or ethic of care. And I want people to know that anytime you interact with another human being, even on the most minute level or even profound level, you impact them, and they walk away thinking either, you know, sex is safe and I can trust people and I am desirable, or they walk away thinking the opposite. And I want people to acknowledge that we're dealing with people. You'll literally see on some dating apps, sex or dating apps, things like, don't take this too seriously. Oh, and I'm I'm horrified by that. Like, please do take it seriously. These are people. Like, you are talking to human beings. So move forward with that understanding. Have compassion. Have an ethic. And that's what that's rooted in.
I mean, I also agree with this. And I feel like it's, again, this idea of that there are these certain markers in relationships. And in order for you to achieve intimacy, a certain amount of time has to pass. You have to see each other a certain amount, right? And like months go by and then we can be like, oh, they're close. But with some cases with, you know, really intense chemistry, you can feel like you are soul bonding with someone on a one night stand.
Yes. 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 And we don't want to either acknowledge that. Some people have shame about expressing that. Mm. And I fully agree with you. You don't know their name, maybe. You know nothing about them. And yet, like you said, you can soul bond and you can move away from that. And again, never knowing their name, not seeing them ever again. And having had a profound connection that maybe you haven't had with a lover or partner of 1, 3, or 5 or longer years.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. And I want people to see that as possible and honor that. Yeah.
And so part of this, when you're talking about relationships, another theme here that you discuss in the book is relationships of all kinds, and that includes not just relationships with an R, are the biggest way that we can grow. So if we don't have them, or if we aren't nurturing the ones we have, we can get stuck.
Right, right. You know, again, it's rooted in the kind of work I do, and so I really value what relationality of all kinds can do for us. It's a beautiful mirror that's held up where we can learn about our triggers, our wounds, our work that's left to do, who we are, how we impact others. Because whether we're having sex with someone, whether we're in something romantic, whether we're currently being highly social or not with friends or family members, whatever it is, we're still always rooted in relationality in some form, even if it's just symbolic or you know, psychological. You're moving around and seeing neighbors, the barista at the coffee shop. And so relationality is something that just we're always existing in. And I want people to work on that skill set. And, you know, being in a romantic relationship of any kind or sexual is a really powerful moment. And I think it brings a lot of our stuff to the surface more so than a solo based frame or phase would do. That and parenting. I think parenting is like the other really profound experience or relationship of like learning about yourself and what your work is. And so that's kind of what I do in my office. You know, it's not just about how do I make this relationship healthier? How do I keep them? But it's also, what are you learning about yourself in relationship to this person? Because there's some ongoing consistent parts of us that will keep emerging, but then there's also these really relational contextual pieces that will shift based on who we're relating to. And the work can get really deep and powerful.
Yeah. And what this reminds me of is, you know, studies show that cis men in heterosexual marriages often stop making new friends.
Yeah.
That leads to one thing, which is that they put all the emotional labor on their wife, who's a cis woman, right? So this happens within heterosexuality often. And how burdensome that is and how that doesn't seem like a dynamic that's going to like feed the relationship.
No, and imagine what happens when that cis-hetero woman wants to have time away, time apart, or time to socialize, then often that other partner feels quite rejected. And I watched that happen with my parents, where they both isolated themselves from the rest of the world, somehow thinking that that was what marriage meant. Mm-hmm. And it was really disheartening because they became a little bored with each other. I think there was loneliness and it wasn't very stimulating or dynamic. And so I think that model's quite problematic for sure.
And hey, since I use the phrase and you do talk about it in the book, will you just give us like a basic definition of emotional labor?
It's an interesting term. And I think for me, it's constantly evolving because the definition I use in the book, I think is a little localized. I think it can be bigger than that. And right now, when you say that, what comes up for me is what I'm asked to do because of my profession. And so for me, emotional labor is the use of that word is an attempt to legitimize the impact that emotional work has on those that are doing it. It's an attempt to legitimize its value for those who have really centered their lives in it. It's an attempt to also help someone set a boundary when others are requesting too much of it and illegitimizing it. And the way it comes up frequently in my life is, and again, God bless everyone, but when friends or people I don't know at a dinner party or at the gym or on Twitter just want me to swoop into therapy, regardless of what's happening in my day, regardless of how much clinical work I've done, and they want me to just be emotionally and psychologically present, and somehow they don't realize that it's labor, it's unpaid labor, or it's depleting, or it might not be the right time. And so I bring that word forward to really help support people that get put in those same situations.
And also it gives a name to it.
Right.
Like, not only does it legitimize it, it just names it. It names it as a thing, because for so long we've just been like, oh, of course she supports him. She's his wife.
Right.
Like, you know, and we don't, and that support is never quantifiable. And sometimes it's just not acknowledged and it's expected.
And it's exhausting.
Yes.
And that is a problem. Because the fact that there's no paycheck or legitimized title, like quote unquote going to the office, it's devalued. And it's, but yet it's one of the most important things we actually have. And so it's good to just be able to name it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a good stopping point, because there is no way to make a segue into my next question. Let's take a break here for my great sponsors, including the Pleasure Chest. It's Anal August, people. What are you going to do to celebrate? There's a lot of options, and they're all on thepleasurechest.com. So stay with us, more with Chris when we get back. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it, and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me and my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, are you going to call us? We miss you. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. I'm talking with Dr. Chris Donahue about his new book, Rebel Love: Break the Rules, Destroy Toxic Habits, and Have the Best Sex of Your Life. In the book, he lets you know how he feels about pretty much everything. And often he will return to a subject. He will say, remember when I said this thing about this? Well, here's another example of that. So I want to open this next segment with porn. Porn, porn, porn. Chris says we should all be watching more porn.
There it is. Nothing more to say, right? So, you know, it's multi-tiered, right? I love the idea of just using my academic credentialing to support an industry that is always, always getting critically analyzed, skewed towards the negative. So I decided that I wasn't going to be yet another person who only focused on the downsides and the negative. And everything on the planet has some element of problem to it, of course, right? But I wanted to talk about the health. I wanted to talk about the resource it is and can be. I wanted to talk about how I do prescribe it to people in my clinical practice. I wanted to talk about how it's really helped transform them in a multitude of ways. I wanted to normalize sex work as a completely legitimate healing form of, you know, labor for people. And I've seen some really beautiful outcomes prescribing it to clients that needed to see that their non-normative body or sexuality is desired and desirable, and to see it in action and to see it sought out. I wanted to highlight that, you know, feminist, queer, body positive, diverse-based porn exists, and just get people more comfortable seeing sexuality, hearing sexuality, and exploring sexuality. And I think porn, like all art, has a really profound place in our culture, and I think we need to access it.
Okay, this brings up another point. You talk a lot about sort of body fascism and body negativity and fat shaming. And so I'm wondering if you'll share some of your tips for, and this goes in with the body, but also just the self, how do we achieve more self-love? Or if that's not quite achievable yet, how do we achieve less self-hatred?
Yeah. So contrary to popular belief, self-esteem isn't 100% an inside job. And I think it's really problematic when people say, you just got to learn to love yourself. You know, it's an individual journey. No, it's not. Our sense of worth, our self-esteem, is reflected back to us. Our worth is an accumulation of how the world has treated us and the value it's told us that we have. And I think that that's okay. And I think that that's actually an empowering thing. And so it's multi-tiered again, where I say, A, media and social media are such powerful things these days. And I want people to take control and be aware of what they're bathing their psyche in. Like, what kind of messages are you multiple hours a day bathing your psyche in? Like, my iPhone has this thing, I don't know where it came from, but it'll give me a daily or weekly breakdown of how much screen time I've had.
Oh yeah, mine too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Every now and then I'm horrified. It speaks to the power of it because of how much time of my day is there. And so I talk to people about just the social media that they're encountering. Are you encountering and following things that reflect back that you are desirable and you are okay and make you feel good, or are they not? Trying to get people to help dismantle these larger institutions and systems that are telling them they're not okay, and kind of evolve those forward. And so I think self-love and self-esteem and body love is more systemic and institutional. And I empower my clients to also be activists. There's something empowering about going out there and pushing back on the things that they're at the mercy of. And we used to, in psychology, when people were struggling with body image and dysmorphia, we used to think it was, you know, in the family system and all that. And there's pieces to that. But we're not a closed system. We're very much an open system. And our culture and its norms and values, we internalize those. We can't not, you know. I jokingly say, but it's true, I'll be at the gym working on just my general heart health, and I'm looking out the windows, and across the street is a billboard, and there's just men in their underwear. And when I'm looking at that, of course, I'm thinking, well, that's what I'm supposed to look like, and that's what people want from me. And then I turn to my right, and that literal model is lifting weights next to me because I live in LA. What a
right.
moment that is, you know? So, you know, we have to just take a little bit control and also not, you know, shame ourselves for the struggles we have, because they're not all our own. And it's a cultural thing. And I want people to take accountability around that.
But what does it mean, Chris, for you to work out regularly and be traditionally considered attractive, mm-hmm. have a traditionally considered attractive, hot, fit body, and and be talking to people who don't have your body and saying, love your body.
And that is massive, what you just said. And it's been something that's been called out to me before. And I guess the way I look at it is this. On one hand, like I was saying about the porn piece, I've made it my job to just really try to help dismantle some of these problematic things, because I have a platform, and I need to know that I'm using my platform for things that are meaningful and good in the world. I go to the office and I work with people who are literally struggling just to get up in the morning and get through the day because they don't feel okay about who they are, right? So that motivates me and makes me go out there and want to just really kick some ass and rip apart the systems that are terrorizing them, right? Because I sit hours a day in these people's struggle, and it's heart-wrenching. And so, yeah, on my downtime, I'm just ripping these systems apart. And I had a really powerful moment with a client in my practice, and, you know, honoring confidentiality and anonymity. He was talking about body struggles, and he's someone who lives in a larger body. And I very stupidly and naively said to him, well, yeah, you know, we all get beat up within that system. We all struggle with loving our bodies. And the look he gave me, sitting there, you know what I mean, with the body I have. And he's like, dude, stop. And it was a really profound moment. And I was like, I have to reorient my relationship to this struggle, because in a lot of ways, it's not my struggle, right? But that's kind of where I guess I landed. I just want to help ease the terrorizing, you know, nature that these people in my practice struggle from, and other people in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another body piece here too, which is, you say this in the book, and it's something, I don't know, I've been told 100 times, but for some reason it really resonated with me this time, which is to, like, get out of your mind and into your body. Yeah. I think it's a very sort of Western, white, capitalist, patriarchal thing for us to be all, like, neck up, right? Everything's going on in our mind, and we're entirely disconnected from our bodies. How do we get into our bodies?
Well, let me start saying this. You know, what was interesting for me in writing the book is me realizing that about myself, right? Where I'm sure you and me and other people in our field, we like to think we're further along in the work, and in some ways we are, but we're still people. We have this profound moments of, wow, I have so much work to still do, right? Mm-hmm. And I realized that I had a lot of work to do around that I was still having sex I didn't want to have, that I wasn't embodied enough to realize, like, this isn't fun for me, or I'm really people-pleasing, and I'm allowing my boundaries to get pushed in ways that I don't want to, and then, oh my gosh, I'm a, you know, white cis man, and I'm supposed to be, you know, so much more empowered and able to handle such things, and I can. And so what would someone of minority status who feels like they can't give voice, what do they feel like? And so it was such a powerfully driving thing. But basically, I think it's about just tapping into pleasure. We are so performance-based, and we're too focused on, oh, am I getting this right? Or what are they thinking about me? Or how do I look right now? And it's like, whoa, that's the head, right? So getting into your body is just focusing on, how's this feel? Is this pleasurable? And it sounds so basic, but it's not.
Mm-mm. No, it's not. It's not at all. Because I think there's, like, a tape going in your head at all times, right? And I'm just trying to sort of, like, mute the tape, soften the tape, make the tape not as loud, because I can't completely shut it off.
No, and if we're in a relationship that has a lot of value to us, the opinion of our partners about us is meaningful. It can feel mm-hmm. fragile. And, you know, again, sex, we want to please our partner. And my God, if you're in a monogamous relationship, there's even more pressure, right?
Because, well, there's more at stake, right?
Yeah, more at stake. And this is it. Like, that's all you're getting. But I think that in doing this work, I think there's something really liberatory. And I think that it can have a larger impact on just how we move through the world in general if we can do this work, because I'm trying to practice embodiment in all areas, where if I'm asked to be a part of a project or to lecture somewhere or write somewhere, I try to stop and just say, how's that feel in my body, that request to write that article? Like, that's bizarre to some people, but it shouldn't be, right? Like, I don't want to think about the money. I want to think about, like, how's that feel in my body? Like, does that feel good? Do I feel safe or drawn to that? And that's been a really powerful new compass for me to try to utilize.
You know, I recently went to AWARE LA's Unmasking Whiteness Institute, which is transformative and amazing. And one of the sort of modules that they go over in these 3 days is, first they ask you, like, what comes up for you when you hear something racist or someone confronts you about something you said around race. And so people were talking. And then they said, okay, what happens in your body? And I was just like, wait, what? But essentially they were like, if we can't get to the bottom of all this like guilt, shame, defensiveness, feeling like we don't know everything, I mean, all the feelings that come up, if we can't get to the bottom of how those feelings manifest and how they actually prevent us from moving forward in the work of dismantling racism, we can't get anywhere. There was like a lot of body stuff in this that I didn't expect. And I just really appreciated it. It is definitely a piece of the puzzle that sometimes we just leave out.
Oh, in my sex therapy training, it doesn't exist. How is that possible?
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, when you get trained as a sex therapist, there's no mandate for certification to get trained in anything somatic or body-based. How is that possible? But that's where we're at. And so I put together a somatic sex therapy-based component for the Sexual Health Alliance, who I'm the clinical director of education for, where we travel the country training doctors and nurses and people in sex education, sex therapy. I had to add that in because it doesn't exist in any of the larger bodies' curriculums. Isn't that wild? Like sex.
Yes.
Sex is body. Yeah. Left out of the conversation totally.
This is like when gynecologists don't have to take a human sexuality class. Like it's not mandatory. It's an elective.
My body, ASEC does not mandate that there's any education done in somatics or embodiment or any of that for certification for sex educators or therapists. And none of the other governing bodies do as well. Mm. And a lot of the books on sex don't even talk about like, whoa. So yeah, we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, a lot. Okay. Well, we're going to form a plan of action on our 2-minute break, and you should too, people. Listen to commercials and then come back and hang out with me and Dr. Chris Donahue. See you in a minute.
It's Anal August. That's right, it's that time of year when it's all about the rear. And yes, the Pleasure Chest has got all the gear. But there's so much more to anal sex than just plugs, beads, and prostate massagers. Whether you are embarking on your very first anal odyssey, or you're a certified ass master, the Pleasure Chest has tips and tricks to help you make the most of your anal adventures. First, there are 12 different sex ed classes all about the ass at stores this month. Can't make it to one? No worries. They'll be covering all things anal via their blog and social media. Everything from booty basics, advanced anal, to anal safety. Plus, there will be B-Vibe pop-ups in LA and New York throughout the month. You can get 20% off all B-Vibe products, online only, or get a free beginner anal toy with every purchase of $50 and up in stores. Go to pleasurechest.com and celebrate Anal August.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This trip to paradise is co-hosted by Javi and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set is hosting its 8th annual trip to paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way. I can go there and come there too. There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for the Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. Swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking with my guest, Dr. Chris Donahue, about his new book, Rebel Love. Break the rules, destroy toxic habits, and have the best sex of your life. I'm going completely off script today. I'm giving him these like one-liners. He's reacting to them. So I'm also going to tell you how to find him. Instead of doing it at the end, I'm going to do it right now. He is at drchrisdonahue.com. On Twitter, he is at Chris Donahue. And on Instagram, he's at Dr. Donahue. And the book is out now. You can get it wherever you buy books. Support your independent retailers. So picking up on what we talked about in the last segment, the other thing that you really dig into is the idea of human touch and the sort of power of human touch. And what struck me in reading it is, I feel like I have these fluid relationships with my friends, and like there are some friends who I like to cuddle with naked and sort of, but it's not sexual for me. It's just, I'm kind of a nudist. They're also kind of nudists, and it feels really comforting to me and sweet. And why do we not celebrate other kinds of touch beyond the sexual?
Yeah, right. I mean, that is the million-dollar question. I think it's a lot of things. Again, not to use these like, you know, cliched words, but you know, sex phobia, body shame, toxic monogamy, not having enough terms to explain all the different ways we can relate and connect to other people. You know, and this is where relational anarchy swoops in and is like, you know, stop making things hierarchical. You know, it's okay to get different needs that we traditionally get met from a lover, from other people, and all relationships are valid. And there's, you know, so there's something really radical in what you just said, but I think it's really powerful. We are so obsessed with everyone in the binary, right? You're a friend. And that means we don't touch in certain ways. We keep our clothes on. Nothing is allowed to be erotic or sensual. And if it is, then you're, I guess, my lover or partner, and we're maybe working on a relationship. And it's like, why does it have to be that split binary? We're just so obsessed with labeling everything and codifying everything. What comes with that, though, is limits and expectations. And so, yeah, trying to break people out of that. I'm like that as well, where I have friends that I want to do all sorts of different things with because the chemistry there is, the compatibility's there, or the safety's there, or I want to bring other levels of closeness in. But it's hard because I struggle sometimes to clarify with them what that means, because I'm okay with what you just said and you're okay with what you just said, but I have people that I assumed that about, and then in maybe letting it actually get sexual or just keeping it sensual really come forth a lot of expectations and assumptions about that. So I'm trying to create a world where that's acceptable and allowed and understandable. And I'm also learning along the way that there's a lot of education towards the other sometimes in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some people sort of in poly and swinger communities might be a little better about this. I mean, people are always asking me when I go to Desire, which is this swing set thing in Cancun, like, oh my God, are you having sex with like a million people? And I'm like, you know, I'm like holding hands with and like kissing or making out with a lot of people. Am I having like naked genitals involved, maybe orgasms involved? No, that's not a huge list. There's just people I'm being affectionate with because that's part of the culture and it's okay.
Right. There are friends that I want to be closer with, and kissing them or other levels of intimacy building or body touch help with that. And like you said, it's a language and it can only be spoken in that way. And there's no other way sometimes to speak it. And that's how I say it, with my body or my sensuality or eroticism. And there's a beauty to that, but it's very confusing to the larger world. You know, I've dated people where when they saw what we're talking about, they were very confused or thrown off. And again, it's the binary. I thought that was your friend. And I'm saying, yeah, it's one of my best friends. Well, then why are you two doing this?
You know? Why are you even holding hands or whatever it is? Yeah,
that's right. Because it's beautiful, because it's healthy, because it neurologically nourishes.
Well, don't you also think that women have more permission to touch each other and hold hands in public than men do and masculine people?
Oh, man. You know, I just watched, I think it was a couple months ago, there was this really beautiful photo of a baseball player in the most beautiful embrace with another baseball player. Apparently, and it's unfortunate that the backstory had to be added to make it okay, but I think he had just found out someone in his family had passed. And it was just interesting to see people's responses to that, to quote unquote hypermasculine men. They're athletes embracing. And it was so beautiful. But that backstory had to get added in for people to not make it erotic or homosexual based or whatever. And I was like, wow, we're still there. Or you go to the movies and you see two cis hetero guys sitting a seat apart. And you're like, what is going on? I agree with you for sure. Yeah.
Because I think, we can't get into this now because I'm running out of time. Okay. Chris, yes. We're running out of time. And the question I was going to ask you is just like far reaching.
Next time.
So if you had 2 minutes left, which you do, what do you want everyone to have as a takeaway for this book and why they should read it? I think you should read the book, people, but why do you think we should read the book?
I think you should read it because my hope is transformation. And I think relationality is about transforming and being transformed, and that's the mission of the book. And so I think it can provide transformation. Transformation, also liberation. I think it can definitely liberate you. That's what a lot of people reach out telling me the book did for them. I feel liberated, and also I feel more okay in my body and in my sexuality. And a lot of people need that.
Oh, yeah. Everyone needs that. I mean, everyone is convinced they're not normal and they're weird. And yeah, I mean, there's tons of permission giving and tons of validation in this book. Even for someone like me who on the shame scale, I'm pretty shameless. Just because of, you know, the work I do and how I don't have that much shame. I have a little bit, but still reading this book, there were these things that I felt like were reinforced, or other people were like, I don't understand that relationship, or I don't understand why you like this, or you know what I mean? So I felt like there was a kind of validation throughout for people to say, we've grown up with this toxic culture, but that is not who you are or who you have to be.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. That warms my heart, because that means that the book is reaching its goal.
Yeah, totally. It's also, I just want to say also, it's really accessible. It felt like you were just talking to me. It was interesting because I was like, how is he going to do the social justice stuff? Like, how do you say in a really casual way, this is what toxic masculinity is? You know what I mean? It's like, no, there's a line there. Like, I don't know how to do it either. I feel like I can get into speaking academically also, and it's very inaccessible. And it's classist and it's elitist and it doesn't reach people, period, number one. So there is a way in which you make some of these bigger concepts accessible to a more everyday person who may be like, I've seen that word online, but I actually don't know what it means.
Thank you.
So I want to tell people that too. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm with you. We have to hang out off projects sometime soon.
We totally do. When we're back in town at the same time. Okay. I want to thank everyone who makes the show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone else at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. You guys, this is one of my favorite interviews I've done this year. It's Elizabeth Ann Wood, and she's talking about her memoir, Bound, A Daughter, A Dom, and An End-of-Life Story. It's riveting, and I loved our conversation, which is pre-recorded because I'm going to be in Orlando. So check that out, and in the meantime, you can catch me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show and some amazing live tweets by Raymond are on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that we can all do what Chris wants us to do, which is break the rules, destroy toxic habits, and have the best sex of your life. Till next time.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.